shows throughout the entire day, including a stellar mix of public affairs, music, comedy, and Spanish language programming, created and produced right here at KPFT. Don't miss a second on HD2. Mouse on over to kpft.org or on TuneIn Radio. KPFT, Houston.
The unruffled beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch signals it is once again 8 p.m. on Thursday, my friend, and time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston, Texas, devoted entirely to storytelling. Right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm your host tonight, Greg Audell. Alongside the amazing team, Drs. Hank Rubicek, Warren Holloman, Mary Edgerton, our wonderful guest hosts who sit in from time to time and give us a little break, our engineer extraordinaire, Tatiana Gago, who is back from all sorts of adventures she's going to share with us later, and of course, last but never least, Floyd the Wonder Dog, who's with us in studio. So What's Your Story celebrates the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers who take us on astounding, riveting, challenging and fascinating journeys before returning us safely to the present, all within just a very few minutes. My guest tonight and I share a deep bond because we have each enjoyed a lifelong love affair with the same amazing, complex, and beautiful soul. Sure, each of us have left her at different times, but we always come back with a greater appreciation for the uniqueness of our one true love, and knowing we will be greeted with a warm embrace upon our return. I ask our guests tonight to share stories of their relationship with the multifaceted personality known the world over as Houston, Texas. Joseph Espithia was on our program about a year and a half ago before he left Houston to explore a strange and distant land known as Utah. He returns to share stories about his journey and about his return. Jose Figueroa grew up in Houston's historic Third Ward. He graduated from Rice University. He must be smarter than I realized. Where he studied filmmaking, Jose has always felt a soulful connection to Houston, a special place that he loves in spite of all its quirks and its flaws, and I suspect maybe because of its quirks and its flaws. He is currently the art teacher at Baylor College of Medicine Academy at Ryan Middle School. I'm going to be interested to hear more about that. Space City, Texas inspires Jose to make art about and for Houston. On any given day, he can be found celebrating our vibrant city by dancing to live music and chronicling Houston's incredible amateur dance scene, for which he received a prestigious grant from the Houston Arts Alliance to produce a documentary about this diverse and dynamic scene. This is Jose's first time to grace our studio, and we are proud to have Joseph back with us again for a second time. Gentlemen, welcome to So What's Your Story?
Thanks, Greg. Good to be here.
Thank you, Greg.
And before each of you deliver your stories, think generically about your favorite stories, your favorite tales, ones you've heard or read at some time, somewhere. In a few your words, what's your favorite? We'll start with Jose.
Well, my favorites, a lot of them come from film, some classic films. And the first one that comes to mind is Citizen Kane.
Oh, that's a good one. That is a good one.
Director, writer.
Okay, you get a gold star for that one. Joseph?
You know, I really don't want to piggyback off of his answer, but I almost want to say the same thing because I'm such a big film lover. And I think that's really what ultimately got me wrapped up in storytelling.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. And friends, if you have not seen Citizen Kane, if your kids have not seen Citizen Kane, make a night of it.
Yeah, anything that's captivating, really.
I've actually been to San Simeon in Hearst Castle that it's based on. It is the most amazing. The small guest homes are, I think, 100,000 square feet.
Wow.
On the property.
Unreal.
Yeah, pretty amazing. Now, Joseph, last month you participated in the Moth's prestigious Grand Slam, which is made up of winners of the previous year's monthly competitions. And yet again, you told another wonderful story. I've asked you this before, and I'm still looking for an answer. When did you realize you were a storyteller?
I think when I finally realized it, and I probably realized this a little later in life, is when my good friend Julie, who's listening from Portland, hopefully, she
first. We love Portland. Hey, Julie.
She told me about the Moth, and I knew nothing of it. And she said, you know what? You're a great storyteller. I think this would be right up your alley. And once she kind of confirmed that, and I attended my first few Moths, and they went relatively well, then I kind of just went, okay, I think I got something here.
I remember talking to you after you came off stage the first time, and I love that moment because it happened to me with Shannon McKerchy, a former engineer on this show, came up to me after my first time and told me that I did a good job, and I was kind of surprised. And I love seeing that look in your face, too, when people were kind of surrounding you going, oh, my God, you were great. And there's kind of a deer in the headlight, like, really? I mean, I thought I could do this.
Absolutely.
But you really knocked it out of the park.
You certainly helped, Greg, so, yeah, thank you.
Oh, hey, man, we're the storytelling mafia. We're proud to recruit new members. And remember, you can get in, but you can't ever get out.
Right on.
Once a storyteller, always a storyteller. Your first story tonight takes place in a very different world than the one that shaped you. Will you tell us your story about dating customs you discovered during your time away from Houston?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So as you mentioned, I just moved back not too long ago from Utah. And while I was there, the big joke everyone kept making before my move was, oh, no, you're going to convert, aren't you? You're going to be a Mormon, aren't you? That's what you're going to do. And of course, I mean, you hear the same thing over and over, and I kept thinking, no, I'm not. That's not the goal here. But so once I got there, I met quite a few people, and of course, people who live there from there. And of course, they didn't have the most positive things to say about the Mormon community. But I didn't want to make any judgments, and I'm kind of a firm believer that I got to see for myself. I got to experience it for myself if I'm going to make this judgment, whether I'm going to hate them, love them, or anything, really, you know. So one of the first friends I made there, he's actually a good buddy of mine, Aaron. He invites me one day, or he tells me, hey, man, let's go on this camping trip. It's in Jackson Hole. I've never been to Jackson Hole. I've heard great things, so I'm all for it. He says, look, all you need is a tent, sleeping bag, and we'll be good to go. I got you covered. You don't need to pay for anything. We're good to everyone. They're going to feed us there. And I'm thinking, this sounds way too good to be true. And so I just go with it. Why not? So, as you know, I'm prepping for this trip and I'm telling my coworkers about what I'm doing. They bring up the point. They're like, hey, you know, this sounds a lot like a singles retreat. And I'm thinking, I don't know what that is. So they go on to explain a singles retreat is for basically Mormons who haven't been married by the age of at least 24, 25, which sounds pretty young considering where we're from. And it's like kind of common to be, you know, married at any age, really. But the big thing in Utah is you get married almost as soon as possible. It's just part of the way of life, you know? So they tell me that sounds like a singles retreat. So basically anyone who hasn't been married yet, they go to these things to meet one another. So to me, that sends a red flag because I'm not prepared to date or get married or any of that. So immediately I'm a little frazzled and I call Aaron and Aaron, this sounds a lot like a singles retreat from my understanding. And he goes, well, I mean, it is, but look, man, we're not there to do that. They're just going to take good care of us. It'll be fine. The church is putting this on, the Mormon church. And I'm thinking, oh boy, I go, well, do I have to pray and do all that stuff? Or like, what is this going to involve? And he's like, no, man, I don't know. He goes, honestly, I don't really know. He goes, but it should be fine. So we go. 3-hour, 4-hour drive out to Jackson Hole. We get there, and upon arriving, it's incredibly awkward because there's not a lot of not a lot of diversity in Utah as it is. So when we get there, we're really the only two Hispanic faces there, and or of any color. And everyone's just kind of awkwardly looking at us, and I'm thinking, well, they should know him, right? These are his people. It's the Mormon church. Nobody knows him. And he apparently finally admits to me, he goes, oh, well, I don't really go to church that often. He goes, I'm Mormon, but I'm not that hardcore about it. And I'm like, oh, boy. So we try to make the best of a very awkward situation. Luckily, somebody comes up and welcomes us and says, hey, grab whatever you want. You can eat whatever you want. You can set up your tent there. We're going to go rafting later. You guys are more than welcome to come. So we're all for it, because that's the big part we're looking forward to. Let's just go rafting and have a good time. And of course, milk whatever they have to offer, which sounds terrible, but that was his goal. And I'm just like, I don't know enough about this to be rude. So whatever. So we have a pretty good weekend. And while I'm there, I'm starting to notice the demographic. A lot of the guys won't really talk to the girls. They're very socially awkward. It's almost like their parents made them go. And they're all, 20-plus-year-olds, and they're just not talking. They're just to themselves. And then on the other hand, you've got the girls who are very cliquish. It's got the very middle school vibe. And they're very silly and very just craving attention. And it was a very weird dynamic. And I'm thinking, this is so not for me. And I'm trying to make the best of it, a bad situation, and I'm trying to talk to people, and it's just not really happening, because either the guys aren't talking or these girls are laughing way too hard at some of the things I'm saying. And I'm like, I'm not being funny. You're trying way too hard. This is a bit much. So at a certain point, I start realizing a girl's kind of following me, and she's kind of clinging on, and I'm thinking, okay, I got to get rid of this. Well, Aaron, at this point, he's really occupied on his phone dealing with I have no idea what. So I'm being left alone with this girl, and I'm really trying to get away from her. And at a certain point in the night, I just say, hey, you know what? I got to go to the restroom. I'll be right back. Well, I never came back. I went to my tent. I went to sleep. And then the next day, she had no problem with calling me out and saying, hey, what happened to you last night? You never came back. And I said, oh, I came and looked for you. I don't know where you went. And it was just insanely awkward. So I tell Aaron what happened. I said, Aaron, you're leaving me hanging out to dry here, man. This is getting more and more awkward. He says, look, man, let's just go rafting one more time, and then we'll get out of here. Okay, sounds good. So we do that. As soon as we get back from the rafting, we start loading up our tents. We start packing everything, taking everything down, and we're loading up my truck. And all of a sudden, here comes this girl. She comes running at me, and she has this Lisa Frank notebook. She comes out with it, and if you know what Lisa Frank is, you know it's a very loud notebook from, like, the 90s. It's just ridiculous looking. This is a grown woman. And she says, hey, before you leave, write your name down so I can look you up on Facebook. And so I grab it, and I'm like, there's no way out of this. So I write down a name, not my name, and I give it back to her, and I'm like, Aaron, we got to go. And we get out of there, and on the drive, the three-hour, four-hour drive back, I explain to him everything that just happened. But at the same time, while I'm explaining it, I'm thinking, you know what? It wasn't all that bad. I got to experience, their little prayer services and the little things they do as far as the Mormon faith goes. And it really wasn't that bad. They're very welcoming, very friendly. And like I said, I'm one to jump into an experience. And if I have a good experience, then hey, great. And if it's a bad experience, it's a bad one. Now I can make a judgment based on those things now. But for me, it was great. And my whole time, my whole year there, I never had a real negative interaction, so I can't really speak ill of that faith per se. So
I so thought you were going to tell me you met your wife there. I think I would have completely freaked out. It sounds like some kind of hybrid of the Twilight Zone and Dating Game.
You nailed it. Yeah, it really was.
How do you feel when you share this story with people?
Honestly, when I tell it, I hope they kind of gain the perspective that, like, hey, if it's your best friend or if it's somebody you really trust their judgment, that's great and all if they give you judgment about something or if they're trying to give you insight, but try to learn for yourself. Try to experience something for yourself so you can make that call. Think for yourself, basically.
I like that. Yeah. I like that. You can't argue with that. As a storyteller, how do you know when your listeners are engaged in your story?
If it's silent.
Mm.
If it's quiet. Or if you're getting a reaction.
Right.
I guess laughing, silence. But if I can see that, or if their eyes are wondering, or, then I'm like, okay.
For me, it's hard to explain, but, you really do feel the vibe of the audience. It's almost like they're one organism. And you can sort of feel, okay, there's a laugh they need here, or, okay, they're getting a little bit bored. Right. I got to throw something in. So, I think you really have to have the ability to edit while you're on stage.
Absolutely.
You know, you can't just recite it the same way every time, because if you do, you're going to be missing, you know, different audiences have different vibes on different nights.
And I know for me, there's a part in your brain that said, that clicks and says, oh my God, I have them.
Yes.
I have them.
It is a feeling that is indescribable.
Absolutely.
It truly is. I don't know how to put it into words. Now, Jose, as an educator with a couple of decades experience, I got something we've wondered about here on the show is, what is the single most essential characteristic students are missing to achieve academic success in your experience with them?
It has to be critical thinking skills. Kids, at least ones I've taught, even the brightest kids, a lot of them, think that there's an answer to everything. It's out there somewhere. Give me the answer. I'm going to find the answer.
Google it.
It's always about Google, and they come up with, the worst Google result, right? And they share that with you, worst possible Google result. But how to think through something, use their those areas of the brains that are underused by most of us. So
it's funny. I was talking to my favorite 7-year-old one day, and I said, you know, when I was your age, and when mommy and daddy were your age, we didn't have computers. We couldn't look things up on Google. He looked at me with complete sincerity, and he said, why, were y'all stupid? I had to explain that no, that wasn't why. But it's such a different world.
Great,
now,
story.
Jose, have you been a dancer your entire life?
I don't remember if my entire life. Certainly, I discovered it late in life, unfortunately.
That was my impression, because I've known Jose a long time. I wasn't
dancing much in high school.
Okay. Well, let's hear your story, Jose.
Yeah, so I am a Houstonian, and it's sort of a story about discovery, and discovery for me here in Houston. So my father was a professional trumpet player in Houston, and my parents separated when I was about 7 years old. But a couple of years after they divorced, I won first place in the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo art contest. I represented all of Houston ISD schools, elementary schools, at the award ceremony. My painting was this idyllic scene of West Texas horse ranch, and of course, growing up in Third Ward, Houston. As you mentioned earlier, I'd actually never seen a real horse ranch, but I painted this and I got first prize. It was very exciting. When the award was this a purple ribbon, and also this they give you this trophy as this it's the letter H for Houston. It's a cowboy hat with on the letter H. And two of the legs of the H is wearing cowboy boots. It's pretty kind. It's like cartoonish, right? But you've seen that if you ever go to the rodeo. So a few days later, my mother and I got into a yellow cab, and we went to the old Coco Loco nightclub where my father was playing. He was playing salsa merengue music there with his band. I remember my father being surprised to see us, and I also remember my mother being very proud of me to be there. So, because we brought the painting, we brought the trophy to show my dad. And again, they were separated at that point, and I didn't see my dad much back then. So that's my first memory of live music in Houston, is at that the Coco Loco. So later on, I would play trumpet at Lanier Junior High. And in the marching owl band, the Mob, at Rice University. But I was never very proficient playing, not as proficient as my dad, certainly. So as an adult, one thing I didn't know is that I always wanted to dance to the live music. So I wanted to be around live music. So as an adult, I did take dance lessons. And I took everything, ballroom, salsa, two-step. And I learned that dancings have different cultures and their own communities. And the one I felt most comfortable with was the swing dancing group. And I loved the great songs from the swing era, of course, the jazz era and all that. But I took dance lessons. And the way it goes is these dance instructors will demonstrate a dance step. Then they'll we'll practice that step. Then they'll play some recording, and we'll practice with the recording. And then we'll do this all over again, just repeat and repeat over and over again. I wasn't getting it. I wasn't getting comfortable with the dance steps. And when and then we go to this DJ dance afterwards, a practice dance, and everybody's in, been lessons, and you got advanced and less advanced people. The advanced dancers wouldn't dance with me. They didn't think I was a very good dancer. So I was discouraged. But also my original goal was to become good enough to dance to live music. So on my own, I ventured to places like the Big Easy nightclub on Kirby Drive near Westview, Rice Village. And Luther and the Healers was playing there every Thursday night. I found a community of people dancing there. There were older people, but I asked random ladies to dance. And we danced, and when I got done, they'd say, "Oh, you're a great dancer." So before I was taking lessons, and I'm not a very good dancer, no one wants to dance with me, but I'm out in the real world, and everybody thinks I'm great. So probably the truth is somewhere in between, right? After several years, that kind of encouraged me to keep going. For several years, I got pretty good at knowing the Houston live music scene. I went to as many venues as I could find, discovering things, discovering bands, all genres of music, and I became quite knowledgeable about the Houston live music scene. And there's this wonderful diversity of musicians playing across the city, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. The music never stops. You don't have to leave your this town to get your live music fix. It's right in your own backyard. So dancing to live music made me a better dancer. It helped me discover something that I believe is innate in all of us. It's called musicality. Basically, it's feeling the music down to your bones, internalizing it. You hear, you respond to it, you move to it, you just move to it. It should be natural, feel natural. The steps will come to you. Musicality helps you connect your body to the music. I've discovered that now that I want to dance to everything, blues, rock, pop, punk, country, even classical music, I want to try it all. Ultimately, dancing to live music is a conversation. A conversation between the two people dancing, the dancers and the band as a whole, or even individual musicians within the band. Jazz musicians will talk to you about that. It all happens in real time. There's nothing like it. Dancing to live music is about connection, connecting to others, connecting to the moment. I'm now an evangelist for dancing to live music. I'm making a film documentary, which you mentioned earlier. Thank you. That celebrates Houston's musicians, dancers, the venues where we congregate for that conversation, for that connection. I hope that when people see this movie, it premieres in December this year, 2019, that they are motivated to venture out for live music and dance.
Well, Jose, I can tell you, we're going to want to have you back on in December, and I cannot wait to see this. I can say without question you see more live music than any person I know. And I know a lot of musicians, and you see more live music than most musicians I know. And I'm excited about, you know, you presenting this with us. You know, I mean, I love every corner of Houston, but I don't know anything about the amateur dance scene. I think a lot of people don't. So I think we're all going to be really anxious. You know, the story of bringing your picture to your father, that really struck my heart. And yes. I can't help but think, you know, there's something about music that tied those experiences together for you. Do you feel like that may be the case?
Yes, I do. I think there's some people have pointed that out before, certainly.
There's a heartbreaking story about a young man who from India, who's the world's youngest surgeon. I think he's in his teens now, but he's a cancer researcher. And I saw an interview with him on 60 Minutes. And he said when he was about three, his father left his mother. And the boy said to his father, "When will I see you again?" And the father said, "When you cure cancer."
Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah, that gets me every single time. It just breaks my heart.
That's brutal.
Spend time with your kids, folks. Spend time with your kids. Well, friends, this is Greg Audell with Tatiana Gago. and you are listening to stories about the tapestry that make up Houston with guest storytellers Jose Figueroa and Joseph Espithia on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 for our friends in Huntsville. Tatiana, are you back with us?
I'm back.
Excellent, excellent. You have had a pretty big summer. First, you graduated with honors in communication from the University of Houston. Then you jetted off to Columbia. University of Houston downtown, yes. Then you jetted off to Columbia for a few weeks. Welcome home.
Thank you.
Did you find the ingredients for future stories during your trip away?
I did. I've actually, I befriended the local vendors in Cartagena, Colombia. So I started having like multiple conversations with them. It was pretty great.
Well, what did you find yourself missing most when you're away? I mean, for me, it tends to be original ninfas. That's like, if I'm gone for any period of time, I got to get back there. What about you? Did you find yourself missing anything from home?
Other than AC, I can't think of anything that I was missing. I had my mom there with me.
Nice.
I had my family that 24/7. We were all together.
And you are so zen.
Yeah. And I also had my boyfriend. So really, I mean, other than really my dad and AC and my dog, it's just, I pretty much almost had everything I needed there.
I think you're close to enlightenment, Tatiana. Well, we are thrilled to have you back with us. We truly did miss you. We appreciate Nick sitting in your stead, but there's nothing like having the family back together. And Floyd the Wonder Dog has been missing you terribly. Now, can you fill us in on the happenings in the Houston storytelling scene?
Yes, I can. Because, you know, Houston has really become a storytelling hub. So much so that's impossible to cover all the storytelling activities in just a few minutes. But let's start with our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild. The Guild hosts a Story Swap the fourth Tuesday of the month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Temple Emanuel at 1500 Sunset, directly across from Rice University. It's a great place to tell stories to a supportive group of like-minded people. Their next swap is July 23rd. For more information, especially about becoming a member, go to www.houstonstorytellers.org.
Once again, what's that website, Tatiana?
www.houstonstorytellers.org.
I'm telling you, you're going to want to check it out, friends. If you have any interest in storytelling, this is a place to go to watch master storytellers, watch newbies, and you can, you know, put your first tentative story out there and get some great feedback.
And while you're on their page, click on radio program on the menu to enjoy hundreds of our shows since 2008.
Hundreds!
So What's Your Story was the first storytelling scene in Houston, and it is considered by many to be an inspiration behind the growth of our storytelling community. So please enjoy our past programs and continue to tune in every week for live stories that connect us to each other. And you don't need a radio to listen to your program.
No, you don't.
To our program. You can listen to us online at kpft.org. And also you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Also, if you have program ideas, suggestions for storytellers, or tell us why you'd be a great guest, drop us a note, and I promise we will get back to you.
Our
at story@kpft.org. Our friends at the Moth hold their monthly swap on the second Tuesday of the month at Warehouse Live. It's a terrific place to listen to some wonderful stories and some that need work. In short, go listen to tellers and start storytelling yourself.
I'll tell you, you know, for years I would listen to The Moth and different storytelling programs and think, you know, I kind of think maybe I could do that. But I didn't really expect the opportunity to come, and I didn't know about the Houston Storytellers Guild. I didn't know about The Moth in Houston, but you know. So I encourage you, come out, stretch those storytelling muscles, or just hear some great stories. You will be so glad you did. And we are serious about, you know, send us emails. Tell us about the great storytellers you know, or we might even have you on the program. We get a lot of our wonderful tellers that way. Again, I am Greg Audell, and you are listening to So What's Your Story? Only on Houston's 90.1 KPFT. Friends, as we know, life is full of choices. Every single day we make choices that might affect the rest of our lives without our even realizing it. You might go to Stop and Go to get gas, or you might go to Chevron, or one of those places you might meet or miss your potential spouse, your best friend, an amazing business opportunity. Every choice you make negates every other possibility, yet it opens up others. Joseph, your next story touches on this truism of life. Will you tell us your story?
Absolutely. So, you know, changing gears here from my previous story. You know, I'm born and raised here in Houston, but for a brief period in time, from about kindergarten through second grade, I lived in this really small town south of San Antonio called Carn City. Super small, population of about 3,000 or so now, but I'm pretty sure it was smaller when I was there. And for those first 3 years, or during that time frame, there was a girl that I met, and her name was Amanda. Amanda was somebody I just absolutely loved. And this is kind of bizarre because I was in kindergarten, like I said, kindergarten, first grade, second grade, but I knew I loved her. She was just gorgeous. Hazel eyes, dark hair, light skin, just gorgeous girl, beautiful personality, beautiful soul. Even at that age, I knew that. And for the longest time, even during that time frame, she liked another boy. She never paid attention to me, and I could never understand why. Well, then I moved back to Houston, and I didn't really reconnect with her until I was probably preteen, teenager. And once I reconnected with her, because we would constantly go back to that small town and we would visit family and friends. And once we started talking more, well, we actually started writing each other, which is hard to believe in this day and age, but we would write letters and we would send each other mix CDs, as cheesy as that sounds. And I would even call her and I would totally run up that phone bill with long distance. And I did not care. I was like, you know what? I will gladly take that punishment because it's totally worth it. But luckily, my parents loved her, too, because they had known her since she was a kid. And so they weren't too mad when they would find that stuff out. So we maintained this relationship. And it even got to the point, as we got a little bit older in high school, she would actually come to Houston. She would stay for weeks on end during the summer. She would go to my baseball games. And once again, I would go make it a point to go visit her in Carn City. And it was great. I mean, I was just head over heels for this girl. We had all the typical stereotypical things in common. You got the same music taste. We would talk when we weren't together. We were on the phone playing guitar back and forth, talking about music and just laughing. And just we connected on every level. And it was bizarre that I was looking back on it now that I was able to experience that at such a young age. And, you know, that went on for a good while until my senior year. We had a bit of a falling out. And we never really recovered from that. And we never even talked after that. And it wasn't until several years later, I was maybe a junior in college at this point, attending Texas State in San Marcos. My parents had decided, hey, let's all meet in Carn City for Easter weekend. So I said, okay, that's fine. So my parents came from Houston. I came from San Marcos. We met there. And part of the ritual there was, let's go to church on Easter Sunday. And of course, the Catholic Church in that small town is tiny, super tiny. So you see everyone, you know everyone. It's really, really pleasant, you know. And as I'm sitting there, I'm sitting towards the back of the church. And of course, we're with family and friends. And I'm not really thinking about much of anything. And all of a sudden, I look and I see Amanda's mother starts walking from the back of the church. She just walked in and she sits about 15 pews ahead. And so I start getting a little nervous because I'm thinking, okay, if she just walked in, surely there's an Amanda somewhere behind her. Well, then there comes Amanda's little sister. And then all of a sudden, here comes Amanda's brother, older brother. And I'm thinking, okay, surely she's next. And I'm getting really nervous because I haven't seen her in all this time since our little falling out, our tiff. So I'm really, really like wondering, where is she? And I notice something. I notice Amanda's brother was holding a baby. So he walks over, sits with the rest of the family, And he's got the baby, and the baby's head is resting on his shoulder. So his back is facing me, but the baby's looking at me. And I look at the baby, and in my head I went, oh my God, that's Amanda's kid. First I thought, wait a minute, I didn't know Amanda's brother had a kid. And then I realized that's not his at all, that's Amanda's. Because the baby looked exactly like Amanda. Hazel eyes, dark hair, light skin. And it's like I was struck by a bolt of lightning. Something happened in that moment. Because I'm staring at this kid. She's maybe one. And I'm looking and I'm going, that is her kid. That is a part of her. That is a piece of her right there. And it blew my mind because I didn't know she was a mother at the time. I had no idea. And I was just shocked. And I just knew it was hers. I just had that gut feeling that is her kid. So we go the whole mass, the whole 1 hour mass. I'm not participating, paying attention to anything that's going on. I'm just stuck on this kid. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, she has a kid. Once mass ends, you know, everybody's talking and everybody's greeting one another, and we go up to her family. And of course, Amanda never arrives. So I thought that was pretty bizarre. So we're talking to her family, and they go on to explain, oh yeah, well, Amanda and her husband are actually on her way back from San Antonio. And I'm thinking, oh, she's married and a kid. I didn't know any of this.
Hmm.
And once again, I'm a little shocked. And the whole time I'm focused on this kid. I'm just like, I cannot believe it. This is a part of her. So of course I greet all of them and we say goodbye and we're going to hit the road that evening or that afternoon. And I grab the little baby's arm and I tell her, I'm like, me and your mom were friends at one point. I know you don't understand anything I'm saying, but you know, me and your mom were really, really, really tight. And she didn't, you know, of course she didn't know what I was saying, like I said, so she didn't care. So on that drive back home or back to San Marcos, the whole time I'm thinking that I didn't know what to think, honestly, but there was a million things racing through my mind at the time. So what part of that was, I'm looking at that kid thinking, could that have been my kid? Could that have been me and her? Could we have done that? Clearly we were on very two different paths here. She has the marriage and the kid. I'm still going to school, still trying to get my life together. And then another part of me thought, I wonder if at some point she'll tell her daughter about me. And when I say that, I don't mean that for the selfish reasoning of like, oh, I need her to know I exist. No, it's more or less that I would really love for her to know that that there's different ways of love. There's all kinds of ways to show love for someone and have experiences in life. And you shouldn't be afraid of those things. And I know Amanda's going to be a great mother. She's always, from a very young age, she's had a very, very maternal instinct. So I'm sure she's raising that kid perfectly. But like the way my parents were with me, they were very open about, you know, their past loves. And I hope she does the same with her. And I hope it, you know, ultimately makes her better for it. So I can't be mad about it, you know.
Did you stay in touch or get back in touch at all?
A few years later, I actually I saw her at my friend's wedding. And so I got to talk to her. And it was very pleasant. And she was very sweet, like always, and very complimentary and just the same old Amanda. And I was just happy for her. I was very, very happy. And like I said, it's two different journeys, two different paths. And I know she'll do well on hers. Hopefully I can do well on mine.
I think you're doing well on yours.
Thanks.
Well, it's a beautifully crafted and a obviously well-told story. It's, you know, like many wonderful stories, it is both touching and painful at the same time.
Yeah.
I'm sure we all get caught up in the what ifs of life. For example, you know, one I think about is a weekend when my mother was supposed to go out of town. But at the last minute, she decided not to, and she decided to go to a party. Doesn't really seem like a monumental decision, does it? But because she stayed home and went to the party, she met my father. And if she had gone out of town, we would definitely not be having this conversation right now. You know, so it is amazing, this right turn, left turn, this door, that door. You just never, ever know.
And that's exactly how I look at that. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So, Mom, thanks for going to that party. Got to appreciate that. Jose, do the what ifs of life, are there some that haunt you?
Oh, when I listen to Joseph's stories about dating, yeah, I can, still being, well, you know how old I am and still being single.
26.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Jose and I are the same age, and we've agreed we're 26.
We will be 26 for quite a
while. We will be 26 for quite a while, yes, and have been for quite a while. Joseph, we encourage our listeners to find their inner storytelling. What do you have to say to someone who thinks they're not that interesting and they don't have stories to tell?
I think those people do. They just don't realize it. But I think another part of that too is that you have to really swallow your pride a little bit and be able to put yourself out there and not be afraid of the world. Participate in life. You know what I mean? Just participate in anything.
I say give yourself some credit, people. You have survived a lot to be where you are in this life. Whatever your age, you have been through things. You have known people. You have known crazy people. You have known funny people. I guarantee you have stories to tell. What would you say to these folks, Jose, who think they're not that interesting?
Oh, start at the beginning. I mean, where were you born? Who impacted your life? Where do you hope to be? There's a story right there.
Every single one of those are going to lead to interesting questions and even better stories. Well, friends, I would be remiss if I didn't tip my hat to the pioneers of NASA this week, the incredible men and women who worked as a brilliant team to send man to the moon 50 years ago next week. That is absolutely amazing. One of those men in mission control was my father, who I think was at his absolute best when he was behind his console focused entirely on the opportunity that history had put before him. Though he's been gone almost 17 years now, I like to think the pride of being part of that achievement was something he took with him on to the next part of his journey. Always remember that beautiful word, one of my favorite words, that was the first one uttered from the moon's surface. Houston. I realized recently that a huge percentage of our audience have probably never actually listened to the lunar landing as hundreds of millions of people did via radio. Yes, many millions watched on television, but many more listened around the world to the landings just as you were about to. As you listen, I want you to remember that the countdown that you're hearing when they say 60 seconds, when they say 30 seconds, that's the amount of fuel that's left for them to land. And they were under orders that once the fuel got to only 60 seconds left, they were to abort the mission. But Buzz Aldrin later said he took one look at Neil Armstrong when it got to 60 seconds, when it got to 30 seconds, and Armstrong had his steely gaze on his landing spot, and there was no way they were going to be 10 feet from the surface of the moon and abort the mission. So they were going to land. Now, whether they were going to be able to take off again, that was another question that they wouldn't really know until they took off. I'm sorry, I lost my microphone for a minute. Dr. Hank, or Tatiana, do you have it?
Phase, everything looking good. Altitude 5,200 feet.
Manual attitude control is good.
Roger, copy.
Altitude 4,200.
Houston, you're a go for landing, over.
Roger, understand, go for landing, 3,000 feet. Alarm. 1201.
1201.
Roger, 1201 alarm. We're go, same type, we're go.
2,000 feet. Into the ag, 47 degrees.
Roger.
47 degrees.
Eagle looking great, you're go.
Altitude 1600. 1,400 feet, still looking very good.
Roger, 1202, we copy it.
35 degrees. 35 degrees, 750, coming down to 23. 700 feet, 21 down, 33 degrees. 100 feet, down to 19. 540 feet, down to 30, down to 15. Okay, 400 feet down at 9. Gate forward. 150 feet down at 4. 30, strip the half down. They're pegged on horizontal velocity. 300 feet down 3.5. 47 forward. Put up. On 1.5 down. 70. Happy shadow out there. 50 down at 2.5. 19 forward. Altitude, velocity, light. 3.5 down.
Isn't that amazing?
13 forward. 11 forward, coming down nicely, 200 feet. 4.5 down. 5.5 down. 160 feet, 6.5 down. 5.5 down. 9 forward. Good. 120 feet. 100 feet. 3.5 down, 9 forward. 5%. How many bites? 875 feet. That's looking good, down 0.5. 6 forward.
60 seconds.
Lights on. 6. Down 2.5. Forward. Forward. 40 feet down, 2.5. Picking up some dust. 30 feet, 2.5 down. Fake shadow. 4 forward. 4 forward, drifting to the right a little. 1.5.
30 seconds.
Forward, just. Okay. Contact light. Okay, engine stop. ACA at a descent.
Auto descent.
Post control, both auto descent, engine command override off. Engine arm off. 413 is in.
We copy you down, Eagle.
Listen, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Roger, Tranquility. We copy you on the ground. You got a bunch of guys about to turn blue. We're breathing again. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You're looking good here.
Okay, we're going to be busy for a minute.
Isn't that amazing? Now, we, I would say, have the disadvantage of knowing how it turns out. But imagine sitting there listening to this as you have no idea what is going to happen because it's never been done before. They were running out of fuel. You know, and I think the whole world was riveted at this moment. And unfortunately, not all of us were around to appreciate that, but we have someone in the studio who was around for that amazing day. Dr. Hank, are you with us?
You know what? The idea of identifying a geriatric in the studio is something
I did not say geriatric. You know, well, I took that word out.
Then what are you calling me? You've got one person.
Wise. Experience.
One person in the studio who remembers it. And who would that be? Not Tatiana, that's for sure. Okay. All right. Well, in the meantime, I'll take advantage of my aging youth. Yeah, it was 1969, Greg, and you got it. It was an incredible situation. I was sitting at home with my grandparents. I was living in their house, and they had a very small 19-inch black-and-white television.
Which was probably pretty state-of-the-art.
Oh, pretty much. You had to get up, and you had to change the stations. There were three stations, ABC, CBS, NBC. That was it, and that was confusing enough. So we're watching it. And my grandmother, an immigrant, she was a Holocaust survivor, as you know, a lot of our listeners know that. And she watched it with tears in her eyes. And she said, you know, this is what I love about America. Now, I'm 16 years old, and I'm kind of naive when it comes to, really, this is America? Although I thought it was pretty cool, too. And I asked her, well, why, Grammy? Why do you think this demonstrates America, represents America? And she said, because people are intelligent and they get things done and they make wonderful things. Now, that sounds really simple. But think about that for a moment, because we used to be a country that aspired to intelligence, right? I mean, we used to be a country that loved creating technology, and we never beat our chests, and we always did the right thing. We pursued intellect and science and literature. We did all of that, right? And the idea of landing on the moon was simply an extraordinary example of that. And now, well, we sometimes belittle intelligence rather than aspire to it. And to me, that is an important commentary, if that makes any sense. So I'm really glad that you play this, because this was a magical experience. We watched someone stand on the moon because of American pride and know-how. You would be hard-pressed to find many people who would even think that being an astronaut is a cool thing to do for a living. People don't realize there weren't many of them. This was really something. I did my master's work at Purdue. That's significant because that's where Neil Armstrong went. And there is a sort of, I guess you can call, a small museum at West Lafayette that speaks to him. And the idea of American pride was so significant in 1969. So that's my rant, and I hope that makes some kind of sense. But I sure do appreciate the opportunity to offer my 2 cents. Thank you.
Oh, it does make sense, and I absolutely love your grandmother's take on it. What a wise woman she must have been, and insightful. Well, thank you. It was always interesting hearing my parents discuss it, because my father was in mission control, but my mother was watching at home. And, you know, a lot of the astronauts' wives were even watching at home, which is kind of amazing. And I grew up in Friendswood and Clear Lake, so pretty much everyone out there had someone in mission control, or it wasn't unusual for your neighbor to be an astronaut. And I remember as a little kid, I was always kind of annoyed, because whenever friends would come into town or family would come in town, they would want to go to my father's office. I couldn't figure out what was so interesting about going to my father's office until I was in junior high, and it was my 97th time in mission control. But I had just seen a film about it at school, and then all the pieces came together. And I got to say, I was a little more impressed with my father that day than I had ever been before.
Unreal.
Yeah, you know, by the way, Tinder Cove, you know the area on Friendswood?
Yes.
Yeah, we were reading about that the other day, and Tinder Cove was really considered to be the Beverly Hills for astronauts.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of the older astronauts still live out there.
Yeah. And that was in Apollo 13. That scene was in Apollo 13, the house on Tinder Cove.
You know, which was a really well-done movie and surprisingly accurate historically.
Yeah, of course, most of our listeners hadn't seen Apollo 1 through 12 yet, but once they do, Apollo...
Ba-dum-ba-tsh. Thank you, Dr. Hank.
Okay.
You know, and I do think you're very right about that age being so identified with not just intelligence, but dreaming and being your best. And I have to say, I feel like we are living in the exact opposite times today. When you hear, you know, the country's leading newspaper referred to as the failing New York Times, or credible news sources referred to as fake news, it does feel to me that we are celebrating ignorance and scoffing at intelligence. And that is a tragic and terrifying thing, especially when there are children you love being raised in this environment and seeing this on TV every night. I would much rather have them see President Kennedy say, "We choose to go to the moon, not because it is easy, because it is hard."
Yep. And it's also important, it's very important for youngsters to know that watching Neil Armstrong land on the moon is a visual story. It's not just a news event. It's a visual story, and they need to look at it that way.
You know, let me ask my guest in the studio, you know, what do you think defines our era, our time period now, in the way that the moon landing defined 1969?
Jose, you better take that one first.
Yeah, I was going to say that, unfortunately, I think dovetail what you both mentioned is this. I think since 9/11, I think the context of 9/11, the way that we deal with so much of our immigrants and the societal question, political questions, it's about fear. The moon landing and that era of exploration was about just reaching out for the unknown.
And hope.
And hope, yes.
Very well said. Joseph?
It's funny because although I was born in the 90s, this was still a pretty big deal to me. I remember my mom making it a big deal. And then when the Mars rover, they're undergoing that mission, she made it a point to make sure I knew about it and to educate me about it. And so even as a small kid, I was totally fascinated by all of it, even though that happened well before my time. But I'm really trying not to piggyback off Jose because he that was a solid response. But I think it's a little bit of the fear mongering. There's a little bit too much of that, it's unfortunate. And
we need more us and less them.
It seems like the pendulum swung in one way, and I don't know. You can hope and pray it swings back in the other way, where it's not based on that anymore.
And kudos to your mom. Mm-hmm. I got to say, my mother was much the same way. I think it's important to make sure children know the significance of historical events that are going on in their time, even if you think they're too young. I remember watching the day Richard Nixon resigned. And I was teeny tiny, but my mother said, watch this. You will remember it the rest of your life. And I've always remembered it. And I love sharing historical events or stories with kids. And you'll be surprised. They're a lot more receptive than you think. They're interested in a lot more than Minecraft and, the screen in front of them. But you got to give them the opportunity.
It's like what you said earlier. Talk to your kids, right?
Yeah, talk to your kids. Yeah, keep the conversation going. They're hungry little beings, eager to hear more.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Jose Figueroa and Joseph Espithia, for your wonderful stories, unique views, and enthusiasm for storytelling and dancing. Stay put, my friends, because Lars is up next with a sweet mix of singer-songwriters on the Tennyson tape deck. Make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling out, join us each and every Thursday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And treasure what you hear. You keep loving great stories, my friends, and we will keep bringing them to you. This is Greg Audell, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that it is absolutely never too late to live happily ever after. Peace, my friends.
Decided to donate your birthday to KPFT this year. Thank you. If your special day hasn't yet arrived, consider donating your birthday to KPFT. Here's how it works. Facebook sends you a prompt before your birthday asking if you'd like to donate your birthday to a nonprofit. Select KPFT as your organization of choice. Then add a personalized message so that your friends know how much KPFT means to you. On your birthday, they'll receive a Facebook notification asking them to make a donation in your honor to KPFT. Thanks again for supporting 90.1 FM KPFT Houston, Pacifica Radio for Peace.
This year, let's go green. To save money in trees, the local station board election will use electronic ballots. Members in need of a paper ballot can leave a voicemail for the election supervisor at 510-854-9663 with their name, address, and telephone number. We are missing emails from many members. Please help by visiting elections.pacifica.org and filling out a ballot.